Welcome to the Connections Podcast, a podcast devoted to how Unitarian Universalists of San Mateo connect to our beloved community. I'm your host, Jack Brennan, Connections at UUSM. Our guest today is Diane Russell. The youngest of three girls, she was born and raised in Denver by a father who was a lawyer and a mother who was a full-time parent. Diane grew up with an appreciation and love for the mountains. She skied in the winter, hiked, and enjoyed the beauty of nature in the summer. Diane decided to go to the East Coast for college, much to her father's chagrin. She had never been east of the Mississippi when she got on a plane to go to Smith College, an all-women's college in Massachusetts. She gained a real appreciation for women having every leadership role, being the dominant athletes and always being called on in class. She proudly learned to call herself a feminist. She spent her junior year in France. Diane majored in government, and after graduation, she headed to Washington, D.C. to change the world. She got a job working for the House of Representatives on the staff of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. That was back when Congress still functioned as a legislative body. Wow, a while back. And it was a great experience for Diane. She worked with smart, committed people and learned a lot. The Congress member she worked for ran for governor of New Jersey, and she took time off to work on his campaign. When he won, Diane moved to Trenton, New Jersey to work in his administration. Working for the governor had big highs and big lows. He raised taxes and passed an assault weapons ban that is still in place today. Those two things combined with a bad economy made him very unpopular. He was defeated after only one term. One of his last acts in office was to sign one of the first state laws banning discrimination based on sexual orientation. It was a moving and proud moment for him and for those who worked for him. At that point, Diane decided it was time to move away from politics. She also realized that she was more of a Western gal, so she came west and went to business school at Stanford, where she met her husband, Ward. They got married 5 years after they graduated, and they have two daughters, Piper and Della, who are now 21 and 19. After Diane graduated from business school, she joined Charles Schwab in a management training program. She was at Charles Schwab for 23 years, working in many capacities and roles, including working in Sydney, Australia for a year. It was a good company with good people, and she saw it grow and go through many phases. Her last role there was as the executive overseeing the website and mobile apps. She was very fortunate to be able to retire from the company in 2018 with the intention to spend some time with her daughters before they left home and to refocus her attention on community involvement. COVID put a kink in her post-retirement plans, but she is mostly doing what she had hoped. She spent the first couple of years focused on family, and in the last couple of years, she's gotten more involved in the community. She volunteers at Samaritan House. She's on the board of an organization supporting single moms. She has helped with some local campaigns. She did a San Mateo County leadership program last year, and of course, her involvement at UUSM as well. Diane, welcome to the Connections Podcast.
Thank you.
I'm really glad you're here. I enjoyed reading your bio. I loved that. But as always, I have some questions. What kind of a kid were you? How did you get along with your sisters?
I am the youngest of three girls. My sisters would tell you that I was the brattiest. I did have the benefit of being the youngest. They are 15 months apart, and then it's 4 years to me. They were much closer in age to each other. I was the little one that followed them around and bugged them because I always wanted to play with them and be like the big kids. We had a very nice upbringing. We got along. We had two dogs that we loved to play with. I feel very fortunate about my upbringing.
Tell me about the two dogs you had while you were growing up.
They were named Tulip and Daisy. Tulip was a Dalmatian mix, super, super high strung. When we would take her in the car, she would whine the entire way. So we'd go up to the mountains, like a 2-hour drive, and she'd the whole time. Whenever I had friends in the car, they couldn't believe that we just tolerated her. And Daisy was the opposite, super mellow. She was a miniature collie mix. They both lived very long time. We got them when I was little, and they died when I was in college. They truly grew up with me.
Right. When you were a child, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I think the answer that many women my age would say, which is I wanted to be a teacher. And I think that that's because that was largely the women that I saw when I was growing up.
Yeah. In your bio, you said that you decided to go east to college, especially since your dad was not a fan of that plan. What factors went into that decision for you?
And my dad was, why would you want to go east? People are mean out there. He's one of the rare sort of native Coloradans of that generation. I think it was partly to be different. My oldest sister went to college in California. My middle sister went to college in Colorado. I did tend to always want to be different than they were. I think that was part of it. And part of it was also, I had the sense that there was some prestige in these colleges on the East Coast. And I was a bit attracted to that as well.
And what was it like at Smith? Did you like it?
I did. It's funny that the fact that it was a women's college did not figure into my decision making that much, but it was a really great experience. I still do think there is a place for all women's colleges. Women dominate in the science classes. They dominate in the math classes. They are all the heads of every organization. The women's sports are the only sports. Therefore, they get all the attention. It is funny, after many years of living on the East Coast, I did come to understand my father's view. Like, it is different. It's not better or worse, but the cultures are different. So it's a little bit more formal on the East Coast, more people who have been there generations and look to those roots, both the pros and cons of that. Then in a lot of places, there are just more people and everything that comes with that. It was a great experience. I'm very proud of Smith. Smith was the first of the Ivy League Seven Sisters, that echelon of colleges, to appoint an African-American president. Ruth Simmons was appointed. It was after I left. And then she went on to become president of Brown University, the first African-American to head up an Ivy League. I'm not certain that Brown would have chosen her had she not had the experience at Smith first. It makes me very proud of the institution.
Yeah. Tell our listeners more about what it was like to spend your junior year in France.
I feel so fortunate to have had that opportunity. Living in another country is just an incredible experience. Certainly, speaking French was great to really get to learn to speak another language relatively fluently. I did all my classes at French universities and in French. I pretty much had a crepe from a crepe vendor in Paris every day for lunch, and just wandering Paris is just an incredibly beautiful city to walk around. I lived with a French family on weekends and vacations, traveled around Europe with other students. It was a really wonderful experience. I feel very fortunate to have had that.
Your jobs in DC and New Jersey sound like really exciting adventures. What year did you start working in the House of Representatives?
1986.
86.
Ronald Reagan was president. It really dates me.
Talk about what you did in the House of Representatives, what your job was.
I worked on committee staff, and I'm not sure that most people appreciate that the committees is where the work really gets done. I felt very fortunate to have just happened into that job. I got very lucky. My boss, who was the head of the committee staff, just became a real mentor and very important person in my life, very smart, took me under his wing. The House Energy and Commerce Committee at the time that I worked there was chaired by John Dingell. John Dingell and Dan Rostenkowski were two incredibly powerful members of Congress. Between the two of them, I think they had jurisdiction over something like half the bills that went through Congress. So the subcommittee that I worked for had jurisdiction over trade-related stuff. There was a lot of concern about trade with Japan at that time. Interesting series of hearings on protectionism and what to do about that set of issues. It also had jurisdiction over insurance, although insurance is mostly state-regulated, but again, a series of hearings that I participated in around that. I started out as in a more administrative role, just helping make sure the hearings had the right, the paperwork was done and they were scheduled correctly and all that sort of stuff. Then got the opportunity to do more professional work where I would actually research the issues and help identify who should be witnesses at hearings. I never worked on legislation. I was too junior for that, but it was really fascinating to see.
That's cool. Who was the governor of New Jersey that you worked for?
Jim Florio.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was a brief time.
It was.
Yeah. What job did you have in his administration?
I think the title was professional staff member. That's a very descriptive title, isn't it? I worked initially on environmental policy, which in New Jersey is a lot there. Did everything from ocean pollution to oil spills to pollution prevention to lots of toxic waste stuff, noise pollution, because they're Newark Airport, people lived around Newark Airport were very focused on that. And then for the second part that I was there, I worked in the legislative relations office and helped facilitate communication relations with the legislature.
Did you work for the campaign?
I did. I actually worked for both campaigns. I worked for his winning campaign. I took a leave of absence from my congressional role and went up, and I was in charge of research, which meant digging up dirt on my own candidate and on the opposing candidate. A lot of the dirt was more substantive back then, like bad votes that they'd made or statements they'd made on issues, not so much the personal stuff that seems to happen more now. When he was running for re-election, I knew that I was planning to go to graduate school, but I worked on his primary campaign, and then I left to go to graduate school right before general election when he lost.
And you met your husband, Ward, after you came out west to Stanford. What made you decide to come west, this far west, to Stanford for that part?
It's funny. The advice that I was given, because I was making a career change, right? I was going from public policy, government into business, was particularly given that circumstance to go to a quote unquote name brand business school. The ones that I applied to were East Coast. I did apply to Northwestern in the Midwest. And then Stanford was really the only one not on the, in the East, on the East Coast that I applied to. When I got in, I was very happy. I went to visit Harvard in February, and I went to visit Stanford in May. And it really was not a very fair comparison. It was not a hard choice.
What kind of wedding did you and Ward have?
I hope everyone can say I loved my wedding. We are both mountain people. We both love the mountains. So we got married in the mountains. We got married in Beaver Creek, Colorado, literally on the side of a mountain, outdoors. We had a pretty small wedding. It was about 75 people. We had people come for the weekend. We went rafting, mountain biking, hiking before the wedding. I did not appreciate how special it is to be surrounded by all the people you love from all the different parts of your life. So you have family, you have college friends, you have work friends, you have his family. Like, it's just a very rare and special feeling to be surrounded by that. Like, I think probably generally it only happens at weddings and at funerals. It was really special, really beautiful.
That's lovely. Share with our listeners more about your long career with Charles Schwab.
Yeah, it is. I feel very fortunate to have, because I feel like I did a lot of different things, but I got to stay at the same company and kind of have that stability and the common connection with lots of people. When I started the company in the mid-90s, it was pre-internet, or the internet was just getting started, but you didn't yet have online stock trading. It was a pretty small company. I think when I started, there were 4,000 or 5,000 employees. You felt like you knew a lot of people. I had a lot of different roles. I worked service. I worked in marketing. Most of my latter career was in product management, product development. I used to describe the company as having good people in both senses of the word, like good, capable, competent people, but also you didn't have to put your game face on to go to work and worry about what people were scheming. Like, people were generally honest. It's an honest company. It's a company with a lot of integrity in a field, in an industry where that is not generally the case. And it grew, it exploded. It was one of the first companies to do online trading and just exploded in the 1999, 2000. And then of course that bubble burst and retrenched, bought a couple of companies along the way, expanded much more into sort of general wealth management. It was kind of a discount broker, self-directed when I started. And now it's the largest broker in America by assets and has a very extensive and diverse set of services. I feel very fortunate to have been able to do so much and stay at the same company.
Right. And during most of that time, you and Ward were raising your two daughters, right? Can you tell our listeners more about Piper and Della, and both back then and now?
Piper is my older one. She is an actress and has been since she was teeny tiny. It's amazing how things reveal themselves early, starting with the little show in kindergarten. She loved a stage. She's an avid reader, has always loved to read. They both have amazing smiles and amazing laughs. That's one of my favorite sounds in the world, is my girls' laughs. Della is an athlete. We live two doors down from a park and has a climbing structure. And when Della was two, she would climb to the top of the climbing structure. And people were like, that teeny child. And it was like, it's okay. She's fine. She's always been fast. Ward is always jealous of her speed. So she likes soccer, basketball, the running sports. Soccer has really been her main sport. But she's the kind of kid who just picks up a ball or whatever, and you're like, oh, you're one of those that you're just good hand-eye coordination and speed. And so she can do whatever physical thing that she's like. She's also very artistic. She, in her younger years, my walls are covered with different things that she's made and origami and that kind of thing. Piper is now in New York acting. She's at an acting conservatory in Manhattan. And Della just started her freshman year of college, and she is at DePaul University in Chicago.
And is she doing sports there?
She was very excited that she made the club soccer team. It's a Division I school. They recruit and all that sort of stuff. So she was not sure that she would make the club team, and she did. She was very excited about that.
Oh, that's cool. You retired in 2008. 18. Share with our listeners more about the volunteer work that you're doing now, not at UUSM yet, because we'll get to that in a few minutes, but the other volunteer work that you're involved in.
I started volunteering at Samaritan House during the pandemic because of in the early, really dark days when food insecurity was such a problem. I started in the kitchen and then shifted to delivering meals. I have been doing that probably 3 or 4 years now. I have such respect for the organization. It's well run. It has a lot of impact. I've been delivering meals to these same folks for a long time now, and you get to know them. Almost all of mine are seniors. I think they really like that interaction that they get just for the 2 minutes that somebody comes to their door. One woman that I delivered to, when I first started out, it was the pandemic. You were masked and you had to knock on the door, set it down, stand back 6 feet, that whole deal. After the vaccines, she comes to the door and she doesn't have a mask on. And I said, "Hello. Oh, it's so nice to see your face." And she said, "Yes, my son said I don't have to wear my mask anymore because it's been 3 weeks since I got the second booster shot." She said, "But I keep forgetting to put in my teeth."
It was so funny.
I strongly encourage people to volunteer for Samaritan House. I'm on the board of an organization called WANDA that provides services for single mothers in the Bay Area. It's a program that does education, that has classes that are career oriented and financial literacy and self-confidence. There's even a class on helping create family traditions. There's a mentoring and community aspect to it. We match the savings that the women in the program do to help encourage them to save. It's a great program. The organization's been in existence for 15 years and has great results. It's relatively small. We're working on expanding, and that's fun to work on. I've worked on a couple of campaigns. The Leadership Council of San Mateo County does a 10-month leadership program to help people be more informed about the issues in the county. So you have 1 month is education, the next month is law enforcement, the next month is the environment, the next month is economic development, and they get great speakers, and it's a great way to meet people. They try to have people from the nonprofit sector, the for-profit sector, and government participate in the program. That was a really wonderful thing to have done as well.
Yeah. Okay, time to turn to your religious biography. So when you were a child, your mother took you to an Episcopalian church. What did you love most about the services there when you were little?
My father never went to church. He would not go on Christmas and Easter. He thought that that was, if you don't go to church, you don't go to church. The only time that I recall him going to the church was when he came to my confirmation, but that's the only time I remember him setting foot in the church. So I think I appreciate, and my sisters, as they, once they got to a certain age, they stopped going. I really liked doing it with my mother. That was a part of it, just having that one-on-one time with her. I did get involved in the youth group, and I liked that, the sort of social part of it. It was a very high church. You would have thought it was Catholic just in terms of the ritual and the formality. At that time, I appreciated that you knew exactly what was going to happen, and there was a real ritual to it. That's what I got out of it.
Like many people, you didn't really attend church as an adult much until you had children. That's a thing that often brings adults back to church. But you did not choose an Episcopalian church for your children. How had your beliefs changed by then?
It's funny because I think I had just been exposed to more life, more religions. I just struggled to reconcile that there's only one way. In the Christian tradition, if you're not Christian, you are not saved. That just didn't feel right to me. There's so much commonality among different religions in terms of values and general outlook about the world. I wanted something that was a little broader and a little less single path.
So that's when you found Unitarian Universalism and UUSM?
That's right.
Okay. Even though you found UUSM when you were looking for a church for your daughters, you told me that your daughters figured out pretty quickly that they could go to church with their mom, as you had done, or they could stay home with their dad, and they ended up picking staying home on Sunday mornings. But you continued to pick Sunday mornings at UUSM. Tell our listeners more about how and why you made that decision.
Yeah, it is very funny that I started down this path for the kids, and then ultimately it was all about me. I came to really love that 90 minutes on Sunday morning. I was working full time, had two young kids. My life was just full, full, full. And you're constantly very focused on getting stuff done and doing things for others. I just really loved that time to take a step back, think about my place in the world, think about just be more spiritual. I loved the music. Vail and Lauren were the ministers when I started in there. It was extremely rare that I didn't feel like I learned something or reflected on something new from their sermons or from the sermons that members did. For the first 10 years, basically, that I attended the church, that's pretty much all I did. I just came on Sundays and attended services, and they were just a really wonderful moment in my week.
Nice. And then at some point, you started getting more involved with UUSM. And do you want to tell our listeners about the success of UUSM's recent pledge drive and your role in that?
I'd be happy to talk about the success of the drive. It's all about the members of the community. I was asked to be on the finance committee, I think 3 years ago, and have really enjoyed that. Charles was treasurer at the time that I started, and then Tom took over, and now Eileen. You get an appreciation of sort of the nuts and bolts of the church by being on the finance committee, because you have to understand all the line items in the budget. That was great. And one of the things being on the finance committee that I kept saying was, we didn't have a stewardship committee. We didn't really have active stewardship, and it was a little scary. where do we stand? We don't really know how much people are going to give. Personally, I felt like we didn't thank people to the extent that I think that they should be thanked. One of the things in my volunteer experience with the kids at school or that kind of thing is, in a volunteer organization, you can't say this should be done, because it's all volunteers. So if you say this should be done, then you have to do it yourself. So after commenting that we didn't have stewardship, I was like, all right, I need to stop saying that and actually do it. So we formed a stewardship committee, and we said we should do a pledge drive for this year, because the finances were so much up in the air with our ministerial transition and hiring new staff. It's not hard, because we have a generous community. We just needed to ask, and people really stepped up. We had a very significant increase that we aimed for. The community really stepped forward, and we did it. I'm still nervous. We're still right on the edge there. We've still got work to do. We now have a full stewardship committee. We've had our first meeting last month and are really getting ourselves organized. And that's great.
That is great. If you had a crystal ball, what would you see in it for UUSM's future?
I would see continued connection. And I'm not just sucking up to my interviewer. I think it is a place of such connection that part of the culture and the community continues to thrive. I have a hope that we get more families with children. I think that that really just contributes to the vibrancy of a community. It continues to be a community that learns and evolves and grows. Not necessarily, I think my understanding of the history of the church is there's always been this thought, oh, we need to grow size-wise. And it hasn't really changed that much in terms of size. It would be great if we continue to grow. I don't envision it'll ever be a huge congregation, but I think if it just continues to grow in all sorts of different ways and the individuals within the community grow.
Yeah. I like that crystal ball. All right. We're going to wrap this up with some quick hitters. I'll ask you a quick question. You give me an answer. Are you ready?
I think so. Okay. I'll try to be.
What's the best advice you've ever gotten?
Am I allowed to be profane on this?
Yes.
Okay. So when I was first starting out, I had the at Schwab, I had the opportunity to have a coach who was a coach in training. She needed to get hours in. So she coached people for free. I was a young woman and I was always worried about what do other people think and how am I being perceived? She said to me, Diane, there are three kinds of shit in the world. There's your shit, there's other people's shit, and there's God's shit. And you only control one of those. So stop worrying about the other two. That advice I have taken to heart and I have shared with so many, especially women, but all lots of people who just spend too much time worrying about other people's stuff or worrying about God's stuff, like is it going to rain or whatever? And you just can't control those. And so focus on what you can control.
That is good advice. What kind of things keep you up at night?
Worrying about my children.
Yeah. Yep. What's your favorite tree?
The aspen tree. Growing up in Colorado, you have lots of mountainsides covered with aspen trees. The white bark in the summer, the way the leaves, they really do glisten when the wind blows them. And then there is, in my opinion, nothing more spectacular than an aspen tree in the fall with that white bark and those bright yellow leaves. It's a beautiful thing.
If you could only eat one food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Chocolate. It would be a very short life because that's not healthy, but
I love that. If you had to hide a giraffe from the government, where would you hide it?
I think you'd have to hide it in plain sight. You'd have to hide it on the savannah.
Okay. Yeah. What's your favorite place on earth?
I don't have a single place. I would say my favorite general place is the mountains. Mm.
Best concert you ever attended?
I think I'd have to say I just went to the Taylor Swift concert, and I call me crazy because I'm not a Swiftie, but it was a really remarkable thing. This stadium full of largely young women who knew every word of every song. Everybody was so connected to each other. And she puts on a show. It was 3.5 hours of her on the stage the whole time. It was impressive. There might be a recency effect, but that was a fun concert.
And if you're not a Swiftie, then what made you decide to go to the concert? Because that's not an easy ticket to get.
A friend of mine called me on Wednesday and said she had gotten 2 tickets. And did I want to spend an obscene amount of money and go with her? And one thing I have learned as I've gotten older is that you should just take opportunities and you should just do stuff. I said, well, let me talk to my husband. So, okay, like, how do you feel about me spending lots of money to go to this concert? And he said,
great, but how are you going to tell Piper, who is a Swiftie, that you are going to this concert? I said, oh, I'll have to figure that out. So I said to my friend, yes, I will take it, but I'm worried about Piper because she'll feel sad. So my friend called me the next morning and said, I just looked on Ticketmaster and there's a ticket available two rows behind us. Go buy it for Piper. So I did. She went with us. I just sat two rows behind, which she didn't care because she was singing every word to every song the whole time. And that was really special too.
Oh, that's so great. That's so great. Would you rather live without the internet or without bathing?
I think without the internet.
Oh, okay. I don't know how that would work.
I do sometimes find myself longing for simpler times. Mm-hmm. I think it would have to be that if this question presupposes that everybody is living without the internet and everybody is not bathing. If it's only me, that's a harder question. Nobody has the internet. Then we just have to all talk to each other again and read books and stuff. And if nobody bathes, we all just are smelly together.
Are avocados overrated?
No. But you know what is overrated? Kale. Kale is overrated. I don't know how kale has become this like such a popular vegetable. I do like avocados, but I'm not a kale fan.
Agree. What's the best compliment you've ever received?
When I had a leadership role at Schwab, someone came up to me and said, you know, I have really benefited from your leadership. You have helped me grow, and I want to be like you as I continue in my career. That meant a lot to me.
Yeah, that's a good kind of a compliment to get. Yeah. Because you never know as you're going along if you're having an effect like that. It's good to hear.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what's your favorite thing about yourself?
I like a lot of things. I like that about myself, that I can be in the outdoors. I can go see a play. I can read a book. I can participate in a lecture. I can go, like, lots of things interest me. I like to learn. It makes it easier. I'm relatively easy to please because of that.
I like that about you too. Thanks, Diane. I so appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. This is, of course, by far the longest conversation you and I have ever had. And I have loved every minute of this. Thank you so much for doing this.
Well, thank you, Jack, for all that you do for our community. You really are a blessing. I have not yet listened to the two-part podcast with you, but I cannot wait.
Well, thanks. And many thanks, as always, to our listeners. Keep making connections. You did it.
You did it. You are so good at this, Jack. They're going to put you on NPR one of these days.
I really do just love finding out more about people's